like as a lame duck. I'm Goldilocks. The first proposal maybe was too hard, the second one too soft. I think this one might be just right.
One of the plan's authors, Representative Daniel Biss of Evanston, says that's how it was designed, to take those frustrating failed past attempts and turn them into something more.
Our approach today is to stitch together what we believe are the best of the different ideas from the disparate corners on this issue, stitch together what we view as a platform for a comprehensive solution to this problem.
So what does it mean for state employees, teachers, and other public workers? Some of it depends on their age. The youngest employees will have to work an extra 5 years before they can get full retirement benefits, but the retirement age stays the same for the oldest workers. Employees would have to pay more for their retirement, an additional 1% the first year and 2% after that. Retirees would still get cost of living increases every year once they're 67 years old, but that would only apply to the first $25,000 of an employee's pension. In short, employees are paying more for a smaller benefit. Bring on the public employee pension unions. Here's Anders Lindahl speaking on behalf of We Are One, a coalition of the state's major labor organizations.
The pension debt was caused by politicians who failed to pay their share, even as public employees like teachers and police officers and nurses always made their contributions. And we're worried that this plan unfairly puts the blame and balances the pension debt on the backs of those workers and retirees.
Whether this latest proposal does less of that than previous versions, Lindahl couldn't say. He says the unions are still analyzing it. But it is markedly different than Senate President John Cullerton's plan, which already made it through his chamber. Cullerton's proposal would force employees to make a choice: give up yearly pension increases or lose access to discounted state-backed health care in retirement. That's what has Cullerton, a Democrat, concerned. The state constitution has a clause that says once they're earned, retirement benefits can't be taken away. Cullerton maintains the way to get around it is by giving employees a choice that effectively reopens the terms of their benefits, requiring them to agree to the changes. Even if that forces workers' hands, the president's spokeswoman, Rakesha Philan, says giving workers that choice is critical, and this new plan doesn't do it.
We don't know that it would actually pass constitutional muster, most notably the fact that it reduces pension benefits. Those are unilateral reduction in pension benefits without allowing the participants to actually accept those new terms.
But another one of the plan sponsors, Northbrook Democrat Elaine Necrit, says the group didn't give that option on purpose. She says state workers were anxious about having to make a choice.
We heard a lot of anxiety about that choice. How do I possibly know what the future is going to bring, to know whether I'm going to need the health care?
She also says that giving employees a choice makes it hard to know how much money the plan would save.
For us to take this very difficult vote and to have uncertainty as to what the savings are, I think both of those combined led us to say, let's see if we can find a different path.
Necrit says whatever form a pension overhaul takes, if one does ever become law, it will be tested in court, and there's no way to tell what'll happen there. What she and other supporters say is key is what else their plan includes, like a provision meant to prevent Illinois from getting into this mess again. It would require the state and other employers to fund their share of workers' benefits or else be brought to court. And they say it reduces the state's expenses. Right now, Illinois covers public school teachers and university professors' pensions. This measure transfers that cost to the schools over a gradual period. While a couple of Republicans have signed on, most suburban politicians are against that cost shift. They believe it will lead to higher property taxes. Representative Tom Morrison of Palatine says before he signs on to the pension package, that has to be addressed.
I would want to see some property tax cap, a stronger property tax cap bill put into place to protect my property tax owners back at home.
Morrison may get that chance. Supporters, including his fellow Republican David Harris of Arlington Heights, say they want to use December to continue negotiations, to tweak it, to come up with something that can pass.
There will be additions, modifications, deletions, changes, but we've got to move forward.
But as history has proven, that'll be tough to do. Even as the unions decry how harshly workers and retirees are treated, the Illinois Policy Institute's Christina Rasmussen says the plan doesn't go far enough.
It is just tinkering at the edges. We've got a big problem, and this bill is almost palliative care. It'll get us through another 3 to 5 years, but we're going to come back with the same unfunded liabilities precisely because we're not switching over to a defined contribution style system.
All of the discussion on the matter may be for naught. After all, in Illinois, the legislative leaders call the shots. The new plan, or anything like it, may never get called for a vote. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Why do elderly people seem to fall for scams? New research suggests older adults may have less activity in the very area of the brain that processes risk and subtle danger. Another possible reason older adults don't pick up on warning signs is an increasing bias against negativity. NPR's Patty Naiman reports.
The people most vulnerable to fraud and scams are the elderly, and there is typically a jump in cases of fraud during hard economic times. So as you can imagine, elderly people are being targeted often right now. NPR's Patty Naiman reports on a study that looks at why older people are so susceptible to being swindled.
Lots of scams come by phone or by mail, but when the scam artist is right there in front of you, researchers say the clues are in the face. UCLA psychologist Shelley Taylor describes how deception may present itself.
A smile that is in the mouth but doesn't go up to the eyes. An averted gaze, a backward lean.
Taylor wanted to know if older people recognized these visual cues as readily as younger people. She brought 119 adults over 55 into the research lab, along with 24 younger adults in their 20s. Both groups were shown 30 photographs, each depicting either a trustworthy, a neutral, or an untrustworthy face.
The older adults rated the trustworthy faces and the neutral faces exactly the same as the younger adults did. But when it got to the cues to untrustworthiness, they didn't process those cues as well. They rated those people as much more trustworthy than the younger adults did.
In a small follow-up study using brain imaging, Taylor's findings suggest older adults may have less activity in the very area of the brain that processes risk and subtle danger. Another possible reason older adults don't pick up on warning signs, she says, an increasing bias against negativity.
It's part of this effort to make life more positive after a certain point in life, which is normally just a wonderful thing. Older adults are really great emotion regulators, but it leaves them with this particular vulnerability so that they don't recognize untrustworthy cues when they should be.
A survey last year from the AARP analyzed the behavior of 723 victims of fraud and compared them to the general public. Doug Shadell, a former fraud investigator, now with AARP in Washington State, headed the survey, which found the average age of fraud victims was 69.
Fraud victims tend to be much more likely to do things like open junk mail, listen to unknown callers on the phone who are telemarketing. They're more open to putting themselves into sales situations, and this explains in part why they may be defrauded.
That and being inclined to believe those too-good-to-be-true promises like a guaranteed 50% return on investment with no risk. Ironically, it was older men with experience in investing who lost the most. Women were more vulnerable to petty fraud, things like sending in $50 to collect on that $50,000 sweepstakes they just won. The current biggest scam, says Shadell, gold coins, often advertised in print and broadcast.
And they'll say, you know, during periods of economic instability, you can't trust the stock market, you can't trust the bond market, the thing you can trust is precious metals.
The genius of the scam, you actually receive the coins. It's just that you've paid 3, 4, 5 times their market value. And scam artists today, says Shadell, are aided enormously by technology that enables them to simply press a
And here is the writer's almanac for Thursday. It's the 6th of December, 2012. It is St. Nicholas Day today. And if you were in Germany and you were a child, you might have polished your shoes last night and then put them out in front of the front door. And during the night, if you had been good, St. Nicholas would fill the shoes with little gifts, little candies and oranges and nuts. 1768, on this date, the first volume of the Encyclopedia Britannica was published, and it kept publishing until this past March, when the president of Britannica announced they would no longer put out a print edition. They would only be online. It was on this date, 1884, the Washington Monument was finally completed. It was begun in 1848. They worked on it for 8 years, and then work stopped. It stood unfinished for 20 years. Then the Corps of Engineers took up the project in 1876. At the time, it was the tallest building in the world at 555 feet. But 5 years later, the Eiffel Tower went up, and that was taller. Though the monument is still the tallest obelisk in the world, and it is the tallest building made of stone. It's made of white marble and granite, and if you look at it closely, you can see a slight color change about 150 feet up, and that's where work stopped back in 1856. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "I Think That I Shall Never See a Poem Lovely as a Tree," Joyce Kilmer, born in New Brunswick, New Jersey, 1886. It's the birthday of the man who took the famous photograph of the sailor kissing a woman in a white dress in Times Square at the VJ Day celebration, 1945. Alfred Eisenstadt, born in Tchef, Poland, 1898. It's the birthday of the daughter of Marie and Pierre Curie, Eve Curie, born in Paris, 1904. Her parents, famous scientists, Irene became a concert pianist and a music critic. And then, as her mother, Marie Curie, lay dying of leukemia, the daughter nursed her mother through her illness. And in 1937, she published a biography of her mother, Madame Curie, which was made into a film starring Greer Garson, and which was a great inspiration for generations of girls who were interested in science. And it was on this date in 1923 that President Calvin Coolidge had the honor of giving the very first presidential address that was broadcast on the radio. It was a speech to Congress, and reception was so clear that listeners could hear the rustling of his papers. Here's a poem for today, a poem by Raymond Carver, entitled Rain. Woke up this morning with a terrific urge to lie in bed all day and read. Fought against it for a minute, then looked out the window at the rain and gave over.